Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
You're listening to 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. Welcome to the Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario, and today I am joined by a community organizer and, involved in politics at all levels. Started as an alderman, now works for U.S. Senator Blumenthal. He also worked in different organizations like such as Flechas and moved all the way up now as is part of a big old organization called Puerto Ricans United, and he's going to talk a little bit about their festivities. Welcome to the show, everyone. Joe Rodriguez.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate you. Much love.
Tell me a little bit about where you grew up.
So I grew up in the Fairhaven section of New Haven. For those who are not familiar with the section, predominantly Latino neighborhood, low income, middle class. So I grew up literally probably about 4 to 6 blocks from elementary to high school. Marcus Street, Clay Street, James Street, literally 2-3 block radius growing up in the Fairhaven section of New Haven.
Well, tell me a little bit about your parents.
Yeah, so my father's Puerto Rican. His family's from Barranquitas. His father moved to New Haven, as many Puerto Ricans did back in the day. They migrated to the States, New York, Connecticut, for work. So they happened to settle in New Haven. My mother... A lot of folks don't know this about me. My mother, her side is Italian. So I'm mixed race. My mother, same thing. Her family migrated from Italy in pursuit of jobs in the States. As luck will have it, both my grandparents moved to the same street in Fairhaven, James Street, which is how my parents met. So I was born and raised in New Haven. As you said earlier, cut a lot of my teeth in New Haven politics and Fairhaven politics. But I grew up in the Fairhaven section. Went to St. Peter's, then Edgewood Middle School, elementary school. Subsequently went on to high school in the community, which is downtown. I'm a Fairhaven kid through and through.
Tell me a little bit about your dad and what kind of ethics did he instill in you?
So my dad, my parents had me at a very young age. They were both teenagers when they had me. As much as my grandfather, my father's father, enjoyed living or working in the States, it was my grandmother who said, "I can't do this. We need to go back to Puerto Rico." So after several years of living in the States, my grandparents on my father's side had a decision to make: either stay in New Haven, where they were beginning to plant their seeds and have a family, or go back to Puerto Rico. It was during that time that my father and mother found out that they were going to be parents. So my dad was 18 years old when he had to make a decision. Does he go back with his parents to Puerto Rico, or does he stay in New Haven, right, to start his own family, given his girlfriend at the time, my mom, was pregnant. So my grandparents went back to Puerto Rico. My dad at 18 started working at 18 years old to raise a family. And to this day, my dad, is a tough worker. He hustled throughout his life and provided for me and my family. I have a sister and a brother, a half brother as well. So he's always instilled in me family values, a love for our culture. So I know a lot of folks who see me very active in the community, like, damn, man, he's Boricua. He's Puerto Rican, Puerto Rican. But a lot of folks don't know that I'm mixed race. But it's because at such a young age, I was exposed to the culture, especially in Fairhaven. So I sort of gravitated, right, to that side. But I am mixed race, and I owe a lot of that to my father and my upbringing in Fairhaven because of the leaders I met during that time.
Your mother is Italian. What kind of woman was she?
Equally hardworking. Again, comes from a family. My grandfather on her side, her father was a Mason Aaron. Again, a lot of Italians back in the 70s, 80s, moved to New Haven, Fairhaven, for mason work, bricklaying work. So equally pushed family values, hard worker, hardworking. So I think that's why to this day, I'm so close with my family. And I have an extended family now with my, you know, PRU friends and my network of folks in the community, because growing up, you know, family values, large Christmas dinners, large events, that was an ongoing thing in our household. New Year's Eve, right? My room was the closet. All the, you know, coats and pocketbooks were going in my room when I was young. So, again, my mom's a tough, tough cookie, you know, having me at such a young age, a teenager, raising me, my brother, my sister, through those challenges in Fairhaven. I give them both much respect.
So you have a nice core foundation of a mother and father together, struggling, making it happen. What impact did that have on you?
So I think, you know, it provided me with some tough skin. You know, growing up in Fairhaven, seeing the challenges my family, my parents faced. My dad was working 2-3 jobs. My mom was a bus driver, a school bus driver. We were on Section 8 and other housing and SNAP programs growing up. Seeing them, you know, struggle to ensure that myself and my brother and sister had a better life perhaps than they had, right? I think that led me to want to equally do more and strive for more. And I can say, no, I was, you know, when I went to high school in the community, you know, I had to take the city bus. So, you know, I was jumping fences through Clay Street, which at the time, Clay Street, if anyone knows Clay Street and Shelton Street and Grand Avenue, you know, back in the 90s, early 2000s, there were some tough streets. You know, you had sort of the drug epidemic still going on in that area. So, you know, there was prostitution happening at Grand Avenue. So I'm 15 years old going to school and I'm passing that on a daily basis, right? Seeing the quality of life issues. But, you know, you had to do what you had to do. And, you know, I took the bus to school every morning. You know, looking back at it, I was like, you know, damn, I did die. I had my bus stop was on Clay and Monroe. And you didn't think about it growing up. But like, you know, looking at it now, like, whoa, like I was in some tough areas growing up.
You were good to go ahead and you went into high school and then you went on to college?
I did. I didn't go back to school until later on in life. Okay. So at 18, I started working for Hill Development Corporation in New Haven. I was graduating HSC, high school in the community. At that time, I was already starting to do a lot of community work. So I was already involved. At 16 years old, I was already involved with the Louisa Festival. I was involved with the old Connecticut Puerto Rican Day Parade. So at a young age, growing up in Fairhaven, I was already beginning to expose myself to the different leaders that were there. So, you know, I was working with Kevin Diaz and Fanny Taylor, Juan Candelaria, Tomas Reyes when I was 16, 17 years old, Norma Reyes, right? So I met these folks growing up. So by the time I was 18 graduating, I've already built an extensive network for an 18-year-old growing up in Fairhaven, you know? So I had the option to do community organizing for Hill Development Corporation. And I took the opportunity. I was right out of high school. They were, I think, in the process of signing an MOU with Yale New Haven Hospital. This was in relation to the building of the Smilo Cancer Center. So some of the components of the MOU were what we're going to give back to the community, invest in the community. We were going to do some community organizing. So out of that, they needed somebody to fulfill the contract. So they needed a community organizer. So I took that role, 18 out of high school. That's how I met a lot of different leaders in the Hill. So now I just talked about growing up in Fairhaven and how I was exposed to Latino leaders. Now I'm working in the Hill and now I'm being exposed to some of the, you know, the pioneers in the Hill, Johnny Dye, you know, who passed away recently. I met Johnny Dye and some other leaders in the Hill, and I loved it. Mm. So I went back to Albertus Magnus School, night school, their bachelor's program for criminal justice administration. Okay. But that was about 4 or 5 years out.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. Right now I'm speaking with Joe Rodriguez, going through his credential and his resume. So you did night school. So, you know, can you testify that it's never too late to get it together?
You know, it's never too late. You know, I was blessed to build a very extensive network for myself at a very young age. But even then I realized there is a cap to that ceiling, right? It was all fun at 18, making money, organizing for the community. But I learned that if I want to continue to pursue more, if I want more, you have to educate yourself. You have to do more, want more. So as tough as it was to, you know, work full time, be involved in a community, go to school, I made a commitment to figure it out. So it's never too late. I don't care if you're pursuing an advanced certificate, an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree, a master's degree. It's never too late to further your education, or even just your knowledge, you know, further your knowledge. You know, subsequently I've taken so many different training courses just because, you know, cause it's, you're never too old to learn. Mm.
Back in the day, you met Menino Osorio, Raul Avila.
Yes. I mean, throwing some names out there.
But these people were there for a long time, and they also provided all of us a foundation.
Yeah, Raul Avila.
Yeah, so yeah. On how to get it done, grassroots. I mean, how many times did you go out there and register a voter?
Man, I think I was registering voters. Even though I couldn't vote because I wasn't even 18. So I was, no joke, registering voters probably at 16, 17. So funny story, I was 16 years old. I remember this like it was yesterday. I lived on Market Street. My mother just got out of work. It was like 5 o'clock. She was cooking. The doorbell rings. My mom runs to the door. It was Kevin Diaz. He was running for reelection as an alderman. So he
14th?
Was,
The 14th?
15th. Yeah, okay. 15. 15th Ward in Fairhaven, knocked on the door. My mom answered, goes into his spiel, right? Hey, I'm running for reelection, blah, 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 blah. My mom was like, listen, I got 3 kids. I'm cooking right now. I don't got time. But my 16-year-old has a lot to say. So talk to him. So I approached the door and I gave Kevin an earful about quality of life, block watches. And I never forget it. Kevin looked at me and was like, all right, what are we going to do about it? And he took my phone number. And then within 2 weeks of that exchange, I was volunteering on Kevin's campaign.
Wow.
Here's an elected official who's running for reelection, who should be focused on right voting or his voters. He took a time for 10 minutes to listen to a 16-year-old. And not only listened to me, but followed up and asked if I wanted to engage and be a part of the problem, be a part of the solution. So I always respect Kevin for taking a chance on a 16-year-old when he can easily close that door and move on.
You go on to become an alderman.
I do.
How was that experience?
His seat. It was actually his old seat.
Yeah, we all know Kevin's old seat. How was that experience for you, and how old were you when you first? Because you were young.
I was 20, I think, turning 21. I just turned 21, actually. I just turned 21 years of age. By that point, you know, I was doing a lot of community work. I was working for Hill Development Corporation. I didn't start working for the senator at that point. I wasn't in his office. So the opportunity presented itself. By that point, Kevin was no longer the alder. It was Maria Reyes was there for a few years now. And Maria was the alder. And, you know, folks were demanding more. I had nothing against Maria. I didn't know her personally. I knew her from the community. It wasn't about Maria, right? And most political campaigns is never about the person. It's about the situation, the environment you find yourself in. So I had nothing against Maria personally. I just felt as a 21-year-old who has been active in that community since 16, I felt that I can contribute my voice and contribute more to what I have seen inexperienced growing up in Market Street, James Street, et cetera. So I took a shot. I ran. And for about 3 months, it was contested. Maria did seek reelection. We were, you know, running at it. And then about 3-4 months in, I was informed that she dropped out the race, that she wasn't going to seek reelection for whatever reason. So I actually slid into the seat unopposed.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the pressure you applied. But by that time,
I don't know.
you did lay a foundation, though, because you've registered voters. I mean, you understand grassroots and how it works.
I was active with the management team. I think I was a secretary of the management team in Fairhaven at 18, 19 years old. So I was meeting voters and Fairhaven residents at a minimum once a month at the Fairhaven Community Management Team. So, yeah, you're right. I certainly did lay the groundwork. And again, I keep talking about it. Network. I built a strong network of people who believed in me. That's why I tell young people all the time, I'm a firm believer of networking. You know, meeting someone, firm handshake, you know, what do you do for a living? It's nice to meet you. Take that card. You never know when that card can come in handy.
Can you testify then that you cannot ever be too young to be involved in politics and to get involved today if it interests you?
Never too old, never too young. At the end of the day, you know, politics, you roll back that word, or you roll back, you know, what it means to be involved politically. All it really means is to make a difference, right? That's what the core of politics is about, wanting to make a difference, seeing a problem and wanting to take a proactive approach to solve it, be it legislatively, be it by organizing, whatever the case may be. But that's politics. It's wanting to make a difference in your community. So, you know, I don't care if you are knocking on doors to register voters on Grand Avenue, going to management teams in the Hill, active in your church, doing a food drive, just give back. You know, that's what we need more of. And in today's toxic political environment, we're so divided. I think what we need more of, people to take a step back and just be kinder. Just give. Serve. I think that's one of our greatest challenges right now. We need more people to just serve, right? Mm-hmm. God gave us two ears and one mouth for a reason. Just listen and serve. Stop chattering away on Twitter and all this other stuff. Just give. Just give back.
Get out there.
Exactly.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and you're listening to the words, wise words now of a very much older Joel Rodriguez. Got a little white in your beard, my friend. So
I'm growing it out. You like it? This is a new thing for me.
It's working. So now you're grown into a big role in Puerto Rico's United. You're part of the festival that takes place downtown. Yeah. How did those early, being involved in those organizations early lead to you being highly successful at what you're doing right now?
So shout out to Edwin Martinez, a.k.a. Bart, and Jonathan Rivera. Both Ben approached me, Jonathan first and then subsequently Edwin, to say, listen, we need to find our voice again in New Haven. At the time they approached me, the Areto Festival, the New Haven Puerto Rican Day Festival was all gone and dissolved. I think Flecha's still existed, but wasn't doing much. They might have had like an impromptu festival at Sports Haven 1 year, but it was, you can tell they unfortunately were looking at shutting their doors. So both men approached me and said, listen, if we're going to do this, if we're going to reclaim, you know, who we are as a community, a Puerto Rican community, when it comes to our culture, we need you because of the foundation that you have laid out with your past role in Flechas and the Puerto Rican Day Parade. So I said, listen, I'll do it, but we got to do it collectively together. Because at the time, my career, this happened about 8-9 years ago, we relaunched Puerto Ricans United. So I was already working for Senator Blumenthal. You know, my career was beginning to take off. So I was like, you know, well, you know, I'm willing to do it, but I can't, you know, commit all of it by myself. So long story short, we collectively said, let's do it. So I put out a call on social media. I was on Facebook. I said, listen, Edwin, Jonathan, myself were going to attempt to relaunch the Puerto Rican Day Festival. Who wants to join us in this endeavor? Meet me at the Greek Olive. Remember the Greek Olive in New Haven? No longer there. 20 people showed up. 20 people showed up on a Saturday morning to say, we want to be a part of this. Let's do it. And then that was it. Fast forward, we're celebrating 9 years.
9 years this year on the green. And over time, you've faced challenges and overcome them. What are the more difficult challenges you face in putting such a, you know, festivity together annually?
Yeah, so, you know, it's one is the funding. It's always, it's, you know, funding is always a challenge when it comes to organizing free public events for the community. So ensuring that we have the funding in place and sort of the manpower that you put into it. Volunteering, as rewarding as it is exhausting, right? It's exhausting. When you work full time, go to school, and on top of that, you're volunteering, it could be exhausting. So, you know, I know a lot of our members early on were getting burnt out. It's a lot. It's a lot to put on a festival and cultural activities. So we had to build out, and that's when the board expanded to about 15 people. We started recruiting volunteers. We started partnering with other community organizations. And thanks to that network of community organizations, support that we've received from our sponsors, our volunteers, we were able to overcome a lot of the challenges in, you know, raising the necessary funds and just having the manpower physically able to put together these events.
You go ahead and you book some of these very good acts that come in and that really celebrate another part of our culture, salsa and things of that nature, even though reggaeton is popular, but you stick to the salsa and the merengue and that type of music. Why do you still stick to the classics versus jumping on board with the modern stuff?
Yeah, good question. The demand is still there. I think a lot of people within our community, especially, you know, those who are in that maybe 40 to 60 age range, right, grew up listening to salsa. So, you know, myself grew up listening to salsa. So it's salsa, merengue, música típica. A lot of that quote unquote old school music has seeped into every generation, right? If it was quote unquote cleaning music on a Saturday morning, or a birthday party playing salsa growing up. So many young people to this day have been exposed to that old school, old style music. So it's intergenerational. So I can have a salsa artist on the New Haven Green and have a grandma or a great grandmother enjoy it. At the same time, have a grandson or granddaughter enjoy it because it's intergenerational. Compared to reggaeton, which, you know, the grandma may not want to quite listen to yet, but salsa, música típica, the foundation, bomba y plena, the foundation of our culture, I think that music transcends and it's intergenerational. So that's why we do it.
For those listening, bomba y plena have African roots within our society, and it goes back into the slavery days on our island, and that we still keep that alive as part of the festival. One thing about the festival is that it has gone on 9 years without incidents. I mean, I don't recall one negative incident since you've been put this on. What do you attribute to that?
Our community. I think our community is well aware, you know, that as easy as it comes, easy as it goes. And I think folks understand within our community that if we want to continue to see this, we have to show up as a community, as a family. So, you know, thanks to the hard work of our volunteers, our board, by the grace of God and the support from the New Haven Police Department and other partners, yes, we have been able to put forth eight years of successful, you know, festivals without any major incidents. You know, yes, we've had, you know, some small things from here and there, but knock on wood, we haven't had any major incidents to the point where police are concerned. Matter of fact, a few years ago, it was concern outward in regarding a threat that was made against us. Not necessarily us, but comments that were made on social media through one of our media partners that caused much panic. But again, that was sort of outward in. And yet we responded as we always do. You throw hate, we react with love. The police department was there. We were able to still, despite that rhetoric that circulated on Facebook, that threat, we were able to have a successful festival.
Puerto Ricans United has turned more into the festival. You also do a brought back the pageant, very involved with the Puerto Rican Miss Puerto Rico pageant. This past year, you did the Fairhaven Day. You were tapped to do that. Yeah, I saw you guys out there organizing that as well. So you really have branched off into like an annual, all year round group doing multiple things in the community.
Absolutely. So our mission is to promote, preserve, and celebrate the Puerto Rican culture in New Haven while actively engaging in community service. So a lot of what you see, be it the Thanksgiving food drive at the Atwater Senior Center, Fairhaven Day, the work that we do with the Arts and Ideas, pop-up festivals, a lot of that is a volunteer arm of our festival. Yes, we donate financially when we can to other charitable causes, but a lot of it is us saying presente, saying present, showing up. And that's exactly what we did for Fairhaven Day. You know, they realized that we put on one of the most successful or major festivals on the green. So they asked if we would be willing to sort of tap into that for the stage component of it. So, so a lot of it's community service. I like to tell people, very similar to like what Arts and Ideas tells their following, we provide cultural content throughout the year. And it, you know, it sort of evolves around the festival, which is in August. But to your point, we do Three Kings Day every January. We talked about our Afro roots just now. Every March, we commemorate the abolition of slavery in Puerto Rico with events held in New Haven where we celebrate our African roots through bomba y plena and through education while commemorating that historic day on the island. We have a flag raising ceremony. We have the Miss Puerto Rico cultural pageant, which is engaging young ladies in high school and middle school to be more active in their community. It's instilling self-confidence, leadership, teaching young ladies, second, third generation who have never been to Puerto Rico, about where their family's from. So to your point, yes, we do a lot throughout the year and it's all volunteer.
We're already coming to the end of our conversation, Joe.
I'm just starting.
Just warming up. You do have a gala that's coming up in a couple of months. That is on July.
Yeah, Thursday, July 31st. It's our annual gala. We honor local champions while recognizing some community folks. All that information can be found on pruinc.org. All our events actually can be found on pruinc.org.
And the Puerto Rican Day Festival that everyone in the city is invited to, of all races, all creeds, all colors, can come down to the green. And that's going to be August
9th, Saturday, 9th. August 9th.
And Saturday, August 9th, all day. I mean, and that's one thing about PRU is this is open to the community. I mean, you can, it doesn't matter who you are. You are invited to come and celebrate and become an honorary Puerto Rican for a day.
Absolutely. It's welcome to all. It's a free event. You know, we have merchandise and food that's being sold. But listen, for you can come with a cooler, some sandwiches out of the refrigerator, some bottled water with your cooler and set up and listen to quality music for over 5-6 hours.
I mean, you got free of charge. You got a bunch of, I will just say this, Latin jazz enthusiasts that have come out and support some of these jazz bands that you have on the green.
Absolutely. Again, we try to touch upon so many different genres of music from that 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. stretch. Salsa, merengue, música típica, reggaeton, Latin jazz, freestyle. We have a lot of freestyle heads out there. So we do try to touch upon so much within not only the Puerto Rican, Puerto Rico culture, but the Puerto Rican, you know, stateside culture, which a lot of that has like that New Yorican mix. So we do try to touch upon a little bit of everything because the Puerto Rican story is not just a Puerto Rico island story. It's a Connecticut story. It's a New Yorican story. It's a New Jersey story. So we try to blend all of that to tell our story.
All right. Looking forward to that house in freestyle. Brings me back to the 80s. Very good. This has been the Electro Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and I want to thank again Mr. Joe Rodriguez for his time.
Thank you.
And like always, to the general public, thank you for listening.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc. See.